Accession number 27344, Reel 2.
Robert McCandless, Reel 2. So you reported to HMS Daedalus at Leon Solent's?
Yes.
What was the first thing that happened when you arrived?
Well, it was late in the day when I got there, because I'd travelled down from Scotland, and it was dark, being November, and we were just put into this big, well, I suppose, dormitory of perhaps 50 in sort of barracks. And altogether, there must have been the best part of 200 of us on the 45th pilot's course, joining up together. So we had four barrack blocks set aside for us. And in each of the barracks blocks, there was a more experienced rating who helped us to get into bunks and whatever we had to do. And then next day, when we went to draw our naval clothing, he then helped us to get into it, showed us how to wear it. Because believe me, bell bottoms are really a most peculiar garment to get into for the first time. But once you're in there, really are comfortable. But anyway, he just sort of helped us with the uniform, how to wear it and how to keep it smart and all the rest of it. And the next two or three days were spent getting kitted up and just gradually learning a bit more about naval discipline, which, of course, to begin with, is always imposed with on the barrack square, just marching up and down, right turn, left turn, all the rest of it. But at the same time, we had occasional instruction in different things, and one of the things we did have was on small arms, rifles and light machine guns, and up to Sten guns, and we started to learn about them. Now, we were only at Leon Solent for a very short time. I can't remember exactly how long, but I would guess a month. And then we moved to HMS St Vincent, which was a stone frigate in Gosport. And that was an enormous barracks. And the 45th Pilots Course had its own barrack block, and that was 200 of us in a block. So there must have been, I suppose, perhaps six dormitories. And we all had double-tier bunks. And everything, absolutely everything done, was in alphabetical order. So if your name was Young, you did everything at the end. And if it was Abel, you did everything at the beginning. But it meant you finished up being with the same group of perhaps six of you, with names starting with the same initial, in the same group. And this is what happened in the barracks blocks. And I finished up with people at the end of the L's and the beginning of the M's. And I seemed to do everything right through the initial training with that group. So you got to know them quite well. And of course, being a McCandless, a number of the others were Max as well, and a number of them were Scottish. So I made some Scottish chums very early on. But one of the, interestingly enough, one of the ones at the end of the L's was Admiral Ligo. Have you heard the name? Well, he was on the 45th Pilots Course, and one of the group that was fairly close together. And his ratings number is two digits different from mine. So anyway, it meant that he and I spoke a lot together. And then we went to flying school together and went through elementary and advanced flying together. So we were together for the best part of a year in the same sort of close group. And that was great. I thoroughly enjoyed that. But at HMS St Vincent, they were beginning to try to teach us more of the naval stuff, how to be a good naval rating rather than to be a good aviator.
What would that entail then?
Oh, a lot of it was square bashing. We did naval signalling, and that was with flags and with Morse. And then we used to do elementary navigation. What else? Dear, oh dear. can't remember now, but it was concentrating more on the naval side of things. So we did boat pulling up and down Gosport Harbour, or Portsmouth Harbour, rather. Oh dear, oh dear. I hated that.
Did you do knots?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. But then I'd done them all in the Scouts. So that was really a doddle for me. But they also went on to describe all the steel wire ropes that the Navy used as well, which I thought was a bit extraordinary, but there you are. They did teach us about them. And this one, which absolutely fascinated me, and the name stuck in my mind forever, is extra special flexible steel wire rope. And this was very special stuff, which was used for running rigging. And I don't know, they taught us how to splice, and using block and tackle, and the different sizes of block and tackle, and how you could get advantage pulling this way compared with that way, and how to stop it running away with you. And you know, it was just completely being a naval rating.
As trainee pilots on the first rung of the ladder, how did everybody feel about doing so much seamanship?
Oh, they didn't worry about it. I mean, we just accepted what we were doing. We knew we were in the Navy anyway. And we also knew we weren't going to be at St Vincent for very long before we went off to do our elementary flying training.
What was the distinction between, obviously, the time you were at Daedalus and doing the very initial training and St Vincent? Was there any distinction between you going from one to the other?
Not so much, really, because Daedalus was getting us kitted out and knowing how to just be naval ratings. And then they tried to teach us in St Vincent to be better naval ratings. But at that time, you see, we were still wearing bell bottoms and round caps with a white band. And the white band indicated that we were potential commission rank. And of course, that meant in Portsmouth that you were a target for everybody else.
You say, how did you get on with the other naval ranks?
Well, there was a lot of rivalry, shall we say. But to be honest, I was never involved in any fracas. They used to call us names and that sort of thing, but we tended to ignore it and get on with our own thing. But you were very busy, and your times ashore were quite restricted. Now, when I say ashore, this was going out of the barracks. And we were allowed to leave on one of two occasions of an evening. There was the early Liberty boat and the late Liberty boat. And you had to be at the gate at the right time to leave on the Liberty boat that you wanted to leave on. And you were inspected by the officer of the watch. And if you weren't in the correct rig, you were sent away to get in the correct rig. And if you missed your Liberty boat, too bad. But again, you see, we were only being paid, if I remember rightly, a shilling a day. So it didn't go very far. So we weren't going ashore to get boozed up a lot. And we had a lot of entertainment in the barracks. And we were still getting to know one another. And you could play games like table tennis or billiards in the Naffy or snooker in the Naffy. The Naffy was quite a favourite place and it was very busy. Very steamy, smelled of tea. And again, there were wrens there, but we didn't associate with the wrens in the barracks. But you could, if you could get alongside a wren, you could have a date outside. But again, I didn't try. I was too shy.
I was going to say, how did you get along with your fellow recruits? You mentioned one or two of them and how you pal up together as a group, but how did everybody get along?
Generally speaking, amazingly well. There were one or two who stood out different, and it's no surprise to know that they were the ones who'd gone to public schools. And their level of confidence was such that they did stand out. But they were chums, and you could be just as friendly with them. I didn't have any that I hated or disliked so much that I could not stand them. We got on very well together as a group.
Was there a real variety of backgrounds?
Oh, I think so. I don't know how many there would have been from public school, but out of the 200, at a guess, I would say probably 20. And the L's and M's, we had three. But for the rest of us, we were from a whole variety of jobs. But again, you see, none of them were careers. They were mainly jobs that people were doing, filling in time until they were going to be joining up, because they all knew that they were going to join up soon. One of them had been working with the ICI. Ray Ligo, for example, had been working in the Times. In fact, he was a reader in the Times when he came to us. And one of them, my particular chum, had been working in the Bank of England. You know, as a very junior member of the Bank of England, I may say. But that's the sort of thing. We were spread. And again, the lads from the north, from Lancashire and Yorkshire, they had been doing a whole variety, some of them in engineering jobs. Oh, it was just a terrific variety of backgrounds. It really was. But I had no enemies and a lot of friends.
You mentioned the barrack blocks. Were you in bunks in the barrack blocks?
Oh, yes, two-tier bunks.
So you hadn't been issued with a hammock at all?
No. I think, as far as the carriers were concerned, hammocks were on the way out by that time. So they knew we weren't ever going to be in a position in a frigate or a battleship where we would need to have a hammock. So no, we weren't issued with hammocks at all.
And what about your food? Where would you eat? Where would you mess?
It was awful. Oh, dear, oh, dear. We had mess decks, and the mess deck tables would be long enough to have probably 12 a side. And one of those sitting there would go and collect the food for the rest. And if it was two tins, then two would go to collect the food for the rest. But one that I remember so well was a breakfast, which was always referred to as train smash, which was bacon and tinned tomatoes. And, of course, the tinned tomatoes and everything were all tipped in together and vaguely heated up. And, of course, the bacon had absorbed all the juice from the tomatoes, and it was all sloppy and horrible, and the tomatoes were terrible, and the whole thing was greasy. So you get dollops of this last onto a plate, and, of course, we all ate it because we were bloody hungry. But what used to really nauseate me was afterwards, you have to go and wash up these huge tins, about this sort of size, greasy, and the grease sticking all around them, and you had cold water to wash them with. It was terrible. But I don't know, I suppose the meals weren't brilliant, but they were edible, generally speaking. But I don't really think they were very good food. But they must have been good enough to keep us fit and, you know, running around.
You mentioned a couple of things that you trained on at that time. You mentioned the weapons training. Where did that take place?
Oh, we had classrooms around the barracks, and there would be a classroom which would be devoted to teaching Sten Gun, and there would be another one devoted to teaching the submachine guns. I've forgotten the names of the two of them that we had. And then you'd have another teaching signalling. We'd have cubicles so that we could signal Morse to each other. Or the instructor could sit in the middle and signal Morse, and we'd all be in cubicles writing down what he was signalling to us. And we'd go outside to do signalling with semaphore and signalling with flags. There was always a signal at the mast in the on the parade ground. There was always a signal flying there, and it was changed at regular intervals, and we had to read it and know what to do with this new signal. You know, in the Navy, there is a whole alphabet of flags. You can use it A, B, C, D, or you can have one flag which is blue on top and red below in horizontal halves, and that's the submarine flag. and then you could have one which was yellow with a black spot in the centre, and that was letter H. And you had all these flags flying, and you had to read it. And somebody at any time could say to you, and an instructor at any time could say to you, what message is flying at the mast? And it just kept you up to it. But that was the signalling, which was interesting enough. And I did get quite good at Morse, but not as good as the observers and air gunners. They were very good.
I was going to say, to what level did you have to, at that initial kind of training level, did you go to with Morse?
40 words a minute, 30 words a minute, something like that. Yeah, you had to be able to take a message reliably, but not any great speed.
Is it difficult to learn Morse?
No. You've just got to apply yourself. I can still remember a lot of it now, but of course it's never ever used now. But I bet you if I was to tap out Morse to my chums at Albury, a lot of them would read it. Just because it gets stuck.
It's interesting with the weapons training as well, because obviously you were learning kind of the elementary side of it. Mm. But I was thinking, obviously, later in your career, obviously, weapons became a part of what you did.
Yes.
How good a shot were you in with the weapons training? Were you a good shot? Or?
Well, we didn't do much actual shooting. We did shoot. We were required to hit a target. But there was no no competition to find out how good we were. I was adequate, but not brilliant. But we really didn't get into shooting at targets until we were well into our flying training. But on the ground, it was just going to the range and firing a weapon for the sake of firing it. So you had to fire it in a safe direction, about as far as it went.
And who were the instructors?
Oh, they were all senior ratings, petty officers or chief petty officers, who had been in the Navy. Well, I suppose by the time they became three badge petty officers, they'd already been in the Navy at least 15 years. And the chief petty officers probably up to 20, 22 years. But they were all very experienced in what they were teaching you. I mean, the signal ratings. A very, very intelligent group of men, I can tell you. They really are very good. And they could read Morse up to quite a high speed. And I mean, they could have a conversation with you and listen to somebody else sending Morse and know whether they're doing it right or wrong.
How did you get on with the instructors? Was it purely professional, or were they were they aggressive or
not aggressive, but they were quite commanding, shall I say, and they wouldn't stand for any nonsense at all. It was a case of, if I say jump, you ask me how high, and that was just about it. They were very good, very fair, may I say. Very fair. I was most impressed, looking back on it, I think, when I read about what went on at places like Deep Cut, I think, my God, we were lucky. We really did have good instructors. And the senior rating instructor was one called Chief Petty Officer Wilmot. Now, he had the most awful bunch of teeth you ever saw in your life. And his language was a bit garbled. But he was as tough as old leather. He really was. But, you know, looking back, he must have had a heart of gold, because he really did look after us. But he was a great man. And when we, in the Fleet Air Arm Officers Association, had reunions, we used to just call them the St. Vincent Reunion. We had them once a year. And Chief Wilmot was always invited by the Officers Association because he was so popular. But he would never have thought that he was popular on the job, that he was doing his best to be a bugger all the time. Now, the instructors I admired. They were really good, and they taught us well. And if we weren't picking it up, if the signalling wasn't going well, for example, they would take you and give you private instruction if you needed it. But I was fairly lucky in so much as, particularly with weapons, I liked them. And I picked up the all the parts, and I could dismantle and put a gun together with the greatest of ease. And I can remember very well, I had a friend who was a Canadian and another man who came from Lancashire, and the three of us were particular chums. And I was getting quite good with this Sten gun, and the other two were stumbling a bit with various parts. And I took them along and coached them on dismantling and putting it together, the names of all the parts and what the gun could do, number of rounds per minute, and all the rest of it. And we came to the exam at the end of the day, and they both beat me. But it was, that's the sort of fun that we had. We were chums together, and we didn't need to go out of the barracks to be enjoying ourselves.
What about discipline? Were there any breaches of discipline, and how was it dealt with?
Oh, well, any breach of discipline, you marched in front of the officer of the day, and according to the sort of degree of crime, he would either deal with it there and then by telling the petty officer of the watch to run you six times round the barrack block with a rifle above your head or whatever. That did happen, but it was very minor things, really, but it was just to instill that if they say go, you go in the direction they point you. But if it was a more serious crime, then you would go in front of either the commander or the captain. And that was serious, because the captain could put you in cells. And if the commander felt that he couldn't give you sufficient punishment for what he thought the crime was, then he could pass you on to the captain. But they could stop pay and that sort of thing, which did happen, but surprisingly seldom, because we all wanted to get through. We didn't want to be hanging around in cells and finding ourselves one course back because of it. But again, just to give you an example of the sort of things, in the barrack block in St. Vincent, the lavatories were in separate cubicles, maybe 10 in a row, and no doors. Of course, we were all used to having doors in our lavatories. And one of the lads on the course put in a request to see the captain about this. And he came up in front of the captain and said that he and the rest of the course were used to having doors on the lavatories. Please, could we have them fitted? And they were. Now, I think that was excellent. Because obviously in the officers' quarters they had their doors on the lavatories, and they realised that we were going to be officers and we should be treated accordingly.
Interesting point about the lack of privacy there. How did you take to that in a?
I was very shy. I really didn't take to it to begin with, but you get used to it quite quickly. But to jump on a number of years to the time in Korea, I was invited to go on one of the American carriers for 7 days. And I was there to watch their flying operations and compare them with ours and see if they were doing things that we could take back to our ship and use to our advantage. But the thing that absolutely astonished me there was when I went into their lavatory, there was a throne room, 10 lavatory pedestals around the room and nothing there else, nothing else. Now, I just could not use that place. So I used to get up in the middle of the night to go to the loo. It was the only way I could cope. Now, I was definitely shy of the lack of privacy to begin with. But as I say, you do get used to it quite quickly.
It sounds obviously from some of the backgrounds that people came from, though, that there was an element of that. That they did see privacy as an issue.
Oh yes, I think so. But I think, generally speaking, the officers were fairly sympathetic towards it. If they could do something, they would, and if they couldn't, they'd explain why. And I thought that was good. It was never a matter of just turning down a request or saying, no, you can't do it, get lost. They would explain it, and I thought that was good.
How much contact would you have with officers?
Very little. Very little indeed. It was mainly the rating instructors who looked after us. I mean, if you saw an officer, it was beginning to get serious. There was a divisional officer for every division, and we had an officer looking after us. But with 200 of us, they obviously couldn't give us individual attention in the length of time we were there, because we were only there for, I suppose, 8 weeks, something like that. And there's no way he could get around 200 of us and even know our names, never mind know us. So we didn't see much of officers at all. But occasionally we had to go and work in the officers' mess in the kitchen. That was just one of the jobs that we had to do. And I remember being sent, the first job I was given in the kitchen was to skin some rabbits. I had no bloody idea how to set about it at all. And of course the naval cooks thought this was absolutely hilarious. I didn't know how to do it, so they weren't going to help me. But in the end, one of the petty officers came over and showed me what to do, but oh dear, I didn't like it. I didn't like the smell, I didn't like the job. But anyway, these are the sort of things that you learn the hard way, as it were.
Could you give me an idea of the daily routine as you would do it at St. Vincent?
I couldn't really remember it very well. Well, I used to get up, get washed and get dressed and go for breakfast. And after breakfast, we fell in the parade ground. And we fell in groups. The 45th Pilots Course would be one group. The 44th Pilots Course would be another. And the 46th Pilots Course would be another. And then it would be a course of observers or something like that. So there might be 800 men on parade. And they changed the person in charge of the parade very regularly, and it was one of us. And the drill petty officer would teach you what you had to do. He said, you're in division tomorrow, and you were required to bring the whole 200 to attention, then go and report them to the officer. And it was a matter of getting reports from all the squads that they had the right number of men there, nobody absent, and then you would go and report the whole course to the officer in charge of the parade. Now, that would usually be a lieutenant commander, and that was about the maximum contact you had with an officer. So then you'd go back. So it was a matter of bringing him to attention while you went off to report and standing him at ease and then marching him off. So having a loud voice was useful, and I had a loud voice. But that's the sort of thing we had in parade. And then we marched off in classes. And one class would go to do signals, and one would go to do guns, and one would go to do boat pulling in the harbour. And then you'd all swap round. And in swapping round, we had a canvas bag in which we carried our various books and documents. And that was always carried in our left hand with the arm straight by your side. And we doubled everywhere. We always ran everywhere, and we'd change over, I suppose, after 45 minutes or something like that, and go on to the next class. So you just had a number of lessons to do in the morning, then back for lunch, then the classes were taken individually back for the afternoon, and we'd have sports quite often, and the sports were just the usual sort of sports, but I did learn to play hockey, which I hadn't done before, and I liked hockey. But it was mainly that we didn't play cricket for some reason, but football, rugby, hockey, we played at that time. Of course, we were there in the winter, so maybe they played cricket in the summer, I don't know. Anyway, we had sports sessions as well, and as I said, pulling in the harbour, that was strenuous. And then in the evening, after the evening meal, we were free to do whatever we liked, usually. We were in duty parts. There were four watches, and duty part of the watch would be given jobs to do. And this would include fire watching, sentry duty sometimes, and that was a farce. And other various jobs, like I said, going off to the officer's mess and various jobs. But the rest of us were allowed to do various things. And as I say, sometimes some of us would go back for extra instruction. Mostly it was a matter of good.